Welcome to Two Songs, One Couple, where a geeky metalhead husband swaps songs
with his nerdy country girl wife. Grab a drink, get comfy, and join us on our musical chat.
So what's up? What you been up to?
Yeah, I've been trying to catch up on podcasts.
How do you do that when, like,
impossible task?
Yeah, like, there's no commute anymore.
I've been behind for a year and a half, at least. Like, I'm still listening to podcasts where they're talking about coronavirus is this thing that's happening, guys. And, like, they're canceling shows over, like, one case. Like, come on. And then the next the next week that they go on, they're like, that was a mistake to underrate the danger of it. And then the week after goes, okay, you know what? We messed up, you know? We got more information.
Yep.
I'm happy that said podcasts were humble enough to admit.
Yeah.
They got it wrong and they said, my bad.
I can respect that a lot better than somebody who just refuses to be wrong, I guess, right? So what podcasts have you been listening to?
There's a couple. The Metal Sucks podcast, and the same people that run it, or the same hosts run a different podcast too on the side, called Rise to Offend.
Okay. I didn't know that those two were connected.
Yeah, same people. The main guy of the podcast is Petr Spych. He's the host, and it feels like he does the majority of the research, and for Metal Sucks, he does the interviews and so on and so forth. And when we started this podcast, before we even had any episodes out, I created a Twitter account for us. I gave them a follow from this new account, and then I just said, I'm going to give this podcasting thing a try. That was it. That was the one tweet, and this brand new account. And immediately, Petr Spych runs the Twitter account. Immediately, he reached out, said some encouraging words.
Aw, that's sweet. And
I was really taken aback. Like, wow, he took the time to reach out to this baby podcast. Or gleam in our eye. Like, we didn't even have anything
a spermy
ready podcast. To go. Yeah. The sperm swim into the egg. And he was cheering it on the whole way. He's like, go, go, go. But I actually met him in Vegas. Sam and I went to Vegas for a concert. Well, I went to Vegas for a concert.
I was going
to
correct
that. And Sam was like, I'm coming along and gamble and
drink
and do all these things. You go do you, I do me.
Yeah, we basically had two separate vacations in the same location.
Yeah. Yeah, so
it was the best.
The only reason I wanted to go was this band called Cult of Luna. They had an album that collaborated with Julie Christmas, and it came out around 2016, I would say. And the album's awesome. And they said they would never perform it because Cult of Luna's from Sweden, and Julie Christmas is in New York, and the logistics of it, I imagine, pretty tough to get everything coordinated together. But they somehow made it happen and said, oh, we're doing a very limited run, but nowhere near in our immediate area. Once I saw Vegas, I'm like, well, we're going. We love Vegas, so we will go there anyway. Why not make this into a trip? And I was just standing there before this Cult of Luna show, before they're about to go on, and I hear next to me some conversation going on. And this really tall dude introduces himself to the guys next to me and says, hi, I'm Petr Spych. I'm from the Metal Sucks podcast. And I look over, I'm like, holy shit, I know this guy. I know this voice.
And you were totally fanboying.
And I was nervous. I called him Papa Coach. It's kind of an inside joke with the podcast. I didn't really exchange too many words with him. He was mainly talking to the people next to me. But, you know, I just introduced myself and we watched Cult of Luna together. And that was it. And then years later, we start this podcast and I follow them and he reaches out to me and I said, hey, I met you. Remember? And he said, yeah. You're the guy, Cult of Luna, so on and so forth.
You're the awkward Asian guy.
Yeah.
That called me Papa Coach.
Yeah. They have an excellent podcast, like Rise to Offend. They cover controversial subjects, like Colin Kaepernick was one, the Me Too movement was one, Married with Children, South Park, so on and so forth. They just choose controversial subjects. They attempt to look at it from both sides. They take the devil's advocate approach too and say, hey, what about the other side? Some people are approaching it from this angle and why are they doing that? And they give justifications or what would be justifications. So it's very well thought out, very well researched. And it's a great show. Rise to Offend.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I'm sure they're not short on material right now.
Oh, yeah. And they're doing an amazing job. So special shout out to Rise to Offend.
Shout out.
One of the very early influences on this podcast and encouraging us to get started.
On this now baby/toddler podcast.
Yeah, and lifting us up too. They promoted us. Thank you for the words of encouragement.
And creating some good content.
Hell yeah.
Awesome.
All right, what are we doing?
Well, today we have a little theme going today. Everybody's favorite cover songs.
Cover songs.
So essentially two songs per person. So it's now four songs one couple today.
Yeah.
So there's this kind of like ongoing, I don't want to say argument, discussion. How about discussion? There's an ongoing discussion amongst us and our friends about covers and what is preferred. Is it like the newer cover version of a song or is it the original? So I chose Jolene, originally composed and recorded by Dolly Parton, the great diva Dolly Parton. And then I chose the cover version by Miley Cyrus.
Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Jolene, 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 please don't take him just because you can. Your beauty is beyond compare, with flaming locks of auburn hair, skin and eyes of emerald green. Your smile is like a breath of spring, your voice is soft like summer rain, and I cannot compete with you, Jolene. He talks about you in his sleep, and there's nothing I can do to keep from crying when he calls your name, Jolene. Understand how you could easily take my man, but you don't know what he means to me, Jolene. Jolene, 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 Jolene.
Did Dolly write Jolene?
She did. So one of the amazing things about Dolly is that she's not only a good performer and good actress and all those other things, but she also is a pretty prolific composer and writer. She wrote Jolene just like she wrote I Will Always Love You. And I guess actually she wrote those two songs on the same day.
What the fuck?
Right? I know. It's not like they're super complex songs, but...
No, but she was having a day.
Yeah. Damn. She was definitely having an inspired day for sure. So Jolene was originally released in 1973 by the great Dolly Parton. She's said that this is a song that has been inspired by like her real life and apparently a very pretty bank teller who was making eyes at her then new husband or newly wedded husband, Carl Dean. And so she took inspiration by that, I guess, and wrote it down into what we now know is the song Jolene. What'd you think?
Yeah, it's cool. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is this her crossover into pop?
It's just before she officially broke it off with her duet partner and crossed over into pop. It's leaning that way. I don't think that's her official pop.
This leans more traditional country, would you say?
I wouldn't say it's super twangy, super traditional country, but
yeah.
I would say it's definitely hinting at her desire to get into the pop realm, but it's still very in the country genre.
Yeah.
This song was also on the list of Rolling Stone's 500 greatest songs of all time.
Wow.
Can you guess where it ranked?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'm gonna go 120.
217.
Okay.
Number 217. I wonder what's number one, actually. We should look that up.
We'll look that up someday.
Yeah.
So I bring up crossing over into pop because we just watched a Netflix show called This Is Pop. And there's a episode where they cover country crossing over into pop. And Dolly was part of that show.
Yeah.
And her segment was, like you said, she was breaking up with one of her...
It was her duet partner.
Yeah. And then said, I'm crossing over into pop. And then her manager was like, there's no way in hell that she's ever going to cross to pop because she's got to be country through and through.
Yeah, because the country machine has it in their head that the one thing that makes country a different genre from all the other ones is that it's quote unquote authentic. And by authentic, apparently that means that it has to be just like it was, you know, last year and the year before that and 10 years before that.
Yeah,
right?
Can't evolve.
You're right,
not supposed
exactly.
to evolve. How dare you stray from tradition?
Right. How dare you gleam inspiration from other music genres? Because no, that will change country and it will no longer be authentic, which is total bullshit.
Load of shit.
Yeah, and it just makes the genre stale and uninteresting.
Yeah. Right?
If anything, I hope country is starting to realize that because they have embraced a little bit more change recently in the sound of country. But I think Dolly was definitely not the biggest push, but definitely a push in the country world of embracing change and differences.
The reason why I even ask if she crossed over into pop yet is this song doesn't read as country in my mind.
Yeah.
There is steel guitar in it. It's fairly light.
Mm-hmm.
The way Dolly sings is not what I think of when I think of a country singer. Like you said, there's less twang. And being that this is a traditional older country song, it's kind of surprising. But I guess maybe not, because Dolly is a national treasure and she stands out on her own. And I don't know, was country like this at this time? Other female country singers, did they sound like her, or was she a pioneer and did she stand out?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not as familiar with the rest of the country artists around that time, but my impression is that Dolly is not unique in her sound.
Okay.
I think older country artists liked that higher pitched, kind of slightly fast vibrato. That tone, I don't think was unique necessarily to Dolly, but I think what was unique to Dolly was the fact that she wrote her own music.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think her crossing over into pop and then acting, and her look was very unique. So her look. So when I was growing up, yes, exactly. Peter's making the booby hands. So when I was growing up, I only knew Dolly Parton as the actress and big boobs and that she was a country singer. But I didn't really know of her beyond that. I didn't know her music, really. And, you know, shame on me for just like simplifying her or oversimplifying her into just boobs and blonde hair. Right?
Yeah.
And shame on society for that, too, because, you know, I didn't get that just from myself. But the more I learn about Dolly, the more I am in awe of her.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love her. And it makes me want to go back and listen to her music. I've never actually dug into her discography.
Yeah.
I've only like dabbled here and there in like Jolene and I Will Always Love You and, you know, 9 to 5. That's about my knowledge of Dolly. But 2020 has opened my eyes to how amazing she is and how much philanthropic work she does and how damn strong she was in pushing back against everybody's expectations and perceptions. And so at that time, she got a lot of heat and a lot of flack for breaking it up with her longtime duet partner. And I think he was her manager too, and breaking off and going into pop. She got a lot of heat for that.
Yeah.
She also got a lot of heat for being blonde and big boobed.
Uh-huh.
And the way she like dealt with that heat, like I saw one or two interviews from her back in the day, and it was just so amazing. You know, there was no hate or anger in her reply, but she was just like, you know, this is my body and I'm going to do what I want to do and I'm going to do it for me. And not for you or anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, God damn, you're amazing. And so like, I wanted to take a little bit of time to dig into Dolly today with the podcast, because I think she's one of the underrated country stars or even music stars in, you know, our society right now. She's awesome.
I agree that she is underrated. Her music necessarily isn't talked about as much as her persona.
Yeah.
Like she's a huge star. Like yeah. Everyone knows who she is.
Yeah. Right? And everybody knows Dollywood, yeah. Right?
She's got star power. That's for sure. It's like the persona's on top and the music is second.
Yeah.
Because when I was younger, same thing. I just saw this big blonde bombshell with big boobs. That's all I knew. But yeah, deep down underneath is a very wholesome person and very sweet person. And Dolly, at least these days, has been in the news for doing some great things for the human race. So, damn, national treasure.
Damn, like she, to me, is what I want the South to be.
Yeah.
She has that beautiful Southern accent. She's so happy all the time. And she's genuinely nice. She's not the, you know, the fake nice, the, oh, bless your heart nice.
Mm-hmm.
No. She is super nice. And she's accepting of, like, everybody. And I say this without knowing her, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So take it with a grain of salt.
Uh-huh.
But from like her interviews and the people that she supports and how she addresses different topics, like from the vaccine to Black Lives Matter to like all these other quote unquote controversial topics, she's always extremely caring and supportive.
Yeah.
And you never get a sense from her that, oh, she's being fake.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want the South to be like. I want the South to be like a warm hug and full of laughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love you, Dolly.
Yeah.
I'm fangirling. Anyways, back to,
so back to the song,
the
right?
Songs. Yeah. So Dolly's Jolene versus Miley's Jolene.
Jolene. Beauty is beyond compare, but blame the locks of Auburn. like a breath of spring. Your skin is soft like summer rain, and I cannot compete with you, Jolene.
So Miley recorded the song in 2012, or just recorded it via a YouTube, I think. I don't even know if it made it on her album or not.
Pretty sure it's just a live cover.
Yeah.
A live staple.
Yeah, so it's on the YouTubes, guys. So what did you think?
Yeah, so with Miley's version, the first thing I noticed is the key is different in mm-hmm. Miley's version. It's lower.
Yep.
So she doesn't have to sing as high, which is fine. She's a different person. She's a different singer. So uh-huh. her range and limitations are different.
Yeah.
The way the drums are in Dolly's version, a very simple four on the floor drum beat. And in Miley's version, it's like a train drum beat. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
Chugga 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 chugga, like that.
It's like Johnny Cash.
Yeah, exactly. The drum beats are different. Also noticed in the video that we watched, the Miley Cyrus video, the drummer had his wallet on the snare drum.
Yeah.
That's what I used to do that a lot too.
Yeah, because it mutes it a little bit, yeah, right? It makes the sound a little bit less ringy.
Yeah. Yeah. It dampens the ring.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the drum beats are different. I guess the instrumental arrangement is not too far off. They both have acoustic guitars, bass guitar. So other than the drum beat, mm-hmm. the key is different and the tempos are slightly different. Otherwise, it's largely the same. So if I'm going to compare them directly, I like Dolly's version better.
I'm torn on this one. I feel like they're both good for different reasons.
Yeah.
Like Dolly's version, just because of the sound of Dolly's voice, it sounds like the person is a little bit more vulnerable, a little bit more scared and full of sadness during the song. Whereas Miley, because her voice is a little rougher, a little bit thicker, she's still a little bit fearful because she's saying, don't take my man even though you can, kind of thing. But you kind of get the sense that Miley's gonna like punch her man in the face instead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, whereas with Dolly's version, you're like, okay, Dolly's just gonna kind of like leave it be and walk away and cry. And so I like both of them for different reasons.
But if you had to choose one, to your tits.
Okay, gun to the tits. I'm choosing Dolly.
Yeah.
It just kind of fits a little bit better.
The original wins.
Yeah.
Since Dolly wrote it and it came from her own personal experience, it makes more sense that when she sings it, the way she emotes it matches more.
Yeah.
However, I think everyone can kind of relate to this kind of subject of being jealous.
Yeah. And scared that you're going to lose the one you love.
Yeah. However, it came from Dolly. It was her original feelings. So it matches more. Whereas Miley's version is good. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I like it too. I would listen to either one.
Yeah.
But if I had to choose one, I would choose Dolly's version.
Yeah. Did you know?
Oh.
Interesting fact.
Factoid.
That Dolly is Miley's godmother.
What?
Right?
Sometimes I forget that how connected Miley is to the country world because her dad.
Yeah.
I totally forget that.
Totally. I find it a little bit funny how Billy Ray Cyrus is quote unquote a country like star now when really he was kind of a joke back when he came out and was popular. But you know what? It's a sign of the times, right?
Maybe enough time has passed.
Maybe.
Because he had the huge one hit wonder that everyone made fun of. Jokes on us because I bet he made a shit ton of money from it. So
totally.
Whatever, what the fuck?
Totally. And he set up his family to be, you know, successful in a crazy Hollywood world, right? So, good for him.
Going back to Dolly and Miley. Yeah, the Dolly version's better. Original song wins. Yeah, with the lyrics, though, there's also this underlying subtlety of Dolly thinking that Jolene is pretty hot. So, it's like they both like her. And
yes.
Here's what you do, Dolly. Threesome.
Yeah. Boom, solution.
Menage time. Husband can get out of the system. Since you also think Jolene is hot, you can scissor a little bit. And then everyone wins.
That doesn't happen. So somebody else thought that as well. And I guess asked Dolly about that at one point.
Ooh, I'm not alone in this.
Yeah, and Dolly was like, well, that's an interesting point. She's like, that's a new take on this. So ultimately, I think she's saying, no, that's not what she was thinking. But she seems to, you know, be able to acknowledge the fact that this is a very beautiful person, despite not being sexually attracted to them.
Yeah. I feel like, though, in Miley's version, it's more of a possibility.
Yeah, true. Yeah. I do agree with that.
Yeah.
I think Miley would agree with that as well.
Okay.
All right.
I like the song even more. Okay. About a threesome.
So out of 5 Dollywoods, what are you ranking this?
All right. So for Dolly's version, 4 out of 5 Dollywoods.
Ooh.
This is a very high ranking for a country song.
Yeah.
History in the making.
Whoa.
I didn't even hesitate, too. It wasn't even like, ooh, that singing, that drawl, or like, ooh, this thing's annoying from the bat. Ah, I have to get used to it. It was immediately, everything seemed to click on all cylinders. There's nothing that was grating to my ears.
Nice.
The vocals, the instrumentation, everything was good. Yeah, Dolly's version is very, very good. And I prefer it.
Score.
Over Miley's, and I will rank Miley's as well. It's not the preferred version, but it's still good. I'm going to give it 3.5 out of 5.
You and your damn decimals.
3.5 out of 5. Dollywoods.
Aw, yay, I did it. I got a 4 out of 5 on a country song, y'all.
Chokity. Let's move on.
Blue crystal fire.
Songs do you have for me today?
The song I have for you is Blue Crystal Fire. It was originally done by Robbie Basho in 1978, and it was on his album Visions of the Country.
Hey, look at that. Like, without even trying, we both went back to the 70s to get a cover song.
Yeah.
We are in sync.
Look at that. Yeah, so Robbie Basho was born in Baltimore, but in his 20s, he moved to Berkeley.
So he's Bay Area, dude. Bay Area.
What did you think of this song?
We're going with the original first?
Yeah, original.
Yeah, so my first impression was, holy shit, that vibrato.
Yeah, his vibrato is crazy.
Like, holy fuck. I was like, god damn, that's fast. Usually you get that with women. I think this might be the first time that I've seen a crazy vibrato on a dude.
Yeah, same, first time. It was very off-putting or surprising, or I don't
or
know
both.
How you want to put it.
I would put it both. I am not a fan of crazy fast vibratos. I must say that the more I listened to this song, the more the crazy fast vibrato kind of melted away. It wasn't as prominent as the first time I hear it. I'm like, ugh, what is that? So it does get better the more I listen to it. Yeah, I thought that the song was good. It's folky.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what I was expecting you to pick.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the guitar. I mean, it's very simple in the fact that it's just a guitar and a singer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say typical for the 70s, but it does have that typical folky thing where it's very repetitive, the chorus and the verse, and there's not much to the song beyond that, and then it just ends.
Yeah.
So I was a little disappointed in the ending bit, but yeah, I think it's a earwormer. It's squiggled its way into my brain.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's good.
It's good. Yeah, your voice goes up an octave. It's good.
It's great.
Yeah, let's break down a few things you talked about. So I'll start with, it's just guitar and voice.
Uh-huh.
As a lot of folk songs can be.
Yep.
And the guitar sounds slightly out of tune.
Interesting. I didn't catch on to that one.
Yeah, it just sounds a little raw, which is fine. It kind of adds to the aesthetic.
Yeah.
His tempo is also a little erratic.
I was thinking that too, but I wasn't sure if it was my recording. I thought that the tempo might be getting faster towards the middle and end of the song. But then I thought it was my player. Like maybe the software that I was using to play it wasn't optimized.
No, I think it's pretty sure the recording, that's how it is. On the recording. It just sounds kind of like a raw live recording. Some dude on his porch put one microphone up there and then he just does it in one take. And they don't overdub. They don't fix anything. You can even hear the fret buzz. You know what that is?
Yeah.
Yeah. So to break that down, a guitar has several frets, and if you don't put your fingers on them a certain way, you can hear the buzzing between the string and the fret itself.
It gives it a little bit of meat, though.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of like the buzz.
Yeah. Yeah, it adds some character. And same thing with you. I hated that vibrato when I first heard it, because I didn't know this was a cover originally. So once I found the original artist and I hit play, I'm like, oh my, what the hell is this vibrato? I was like... Something like that. Not quite, but very close. But same experience with you. The more I listened to it, the more it made sense and the more it fit with what he was trying to achieve. And
yeah,
what I also want to piggyback on what you were saying, how it's very repetitive. Folk is a product of the blues.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the blues has an AAB structure. And what that is you have a vocal line that you repeat. What is that a good example?
Hound dog. You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to hound dog, right? You ain't nothing but a hound dog. No, ain't no friend of mine.
Crying all the time.
That's... Oh, fuck. Okay. You ain't nothing but a hound dog crying all the time. That's A.
Uh-huh.
Does it again. You ain't nothing but a hound dog crying all the time. Another A, right?
Uh-huh.
And then B. There's another line there.
You ain't never caught a rabbit, so you ain't no friend of mine.
Yeah. You ain't never caught a rabbit, and you ain't no friend of mine. I'm so bad with lyrics. So, AAB. With this song, it's AABBC. Blue Crystal Fire, Blue Crystal Fire. So, Burn Brightly in Me, Burn Brightly in Me. That's BB. And then the last C. In me, my love.
Yeah.
So, it's like blues, but a little extended. More extended.
Interesting.
What I also like about the music of the song is there's a subtle time signature change in there.
Wait, in the original?
Even in the original, yeah. There's a measure of six thrown in there.
Son of a bitch.
Did you notice it?
No. Who does that?
That's one of my favorite things about odd time signatures is when it's in there, but you don't notice it because it's a natural fit.
But what's the point then?
What do you mean, what's the point? Sometimes the musical phrase doesn't always fit in four.
Not about, at all.
Did you notice in Hey Ya, there's a measure of two thrown in?
No.
Hey Ya.
One, two, three, four. Oh my God, my mind is blown.
Yeah, but nobody notices it because, well, it still keeps the that, right?
Yeah.
But it just shortens one little or extends. Yeah, so this song has a subtle time signature change in there.
That's crazy.
Yep.
That was beautifully done. Way to fool me, Robbie.
Good job, Robbie.
All right, so who covered this? Who's the cover?
Crystal fire, blue crystal fire, burn brightly in me, burn brightly in me.
Cover, which is the version I heard first, was done by the Fire Orchestra.
Fire exclamation point.
Yeah. How do you feel about exclamation points in the middle of a band's name, like Panic at the Disco and Godspeed You, Black Emperor?
Well, first of all, I don't think you're saying it correctly based on the punctuation.
Panic at the Disco.
Exactly.
Blue Crystal Fire by Fire Orchestra is off of their 2019 album Arrival. Happens to be my favorite non-metal album of that year.
Oh.
Just so you know.
Just putting it out there. Peter likes his lists.
So the name. Fire Orchestra. Originally, the group was just three dudes. Oh. And they were just called Fire. Just Fire exclamation, right?
Uh-huh.
Somewhere along the line, they added an orchestra. They added violins, saxophones, clarinets, keyboard, singers, too. And so now that they have an orchestra... They're calling it Fire Orchestra, but the exclamation point was already there in the original name.
Okay.
So what would they move it to Fire Orchestra? Or do they just keep it their original name, Fire, and then just add orchestra to the end?
Yeah.
That's what they did.
You know what they did, so makes sense.
Their genre is typically jazz, more specifically free jazz, experimental improv, and like noise, like that kind of jazz.
Oh, my favorite. Yay. That explains a few things.
So this song is an anomaly on the album. The rest of the album does not sound like this at all.
I would not. So I do not want to listen to the rest of the album.
Song breaks up the rest of it. All right. After all that shit, what'd you think of this version?
It does sound very Scandinavian, metal-y, proggy, in that it's like a, maybe not even proggy, but like you get a lot of the higher soprano singing similar to this in like some of the other Swedish and Scandinavian acts. I was a little upset in the beginning that it's 2.5 minutes of fucking noise, of fucking background noise, and possibly someone sighing. I'm not quite sure what that noise is. Or inhaling. It's something like...
It could be, yeah, because it's all horns, right?
Mm.
So if they mic it up a certain way, you could probably hear them breathing. Because it's so silent, that whole first 2.5 minutes is just long held out notes. You did mention Prague, and it's Prague in the sense of, if you think of some of Pink Floyd's songs, where it's very soundscapey.
I don't even think I could pinpoint any sounds in the 2.5 minutes. It's just kind of silence with odd background noise. To me, it sounded like I'm not even supposed to be hearing this. Like, this is like somebody setting up.
No, it's horns. They're playing. Yeah.
Oh, it's like super low, almost like a didgeridoo, super quiet, deep horn noise.
Yeah.
I didn't catch on to that because I was so mad, I guess.
It's the baritone sax and the bass clarinets just playing very low notes to set the scene.
And very quietly.
Yeah, it's pretty quiet.
So quiet that I hated it. Yeah, not a fan. So once we got past 2.5 minutes of that, it started to get better. It's definitely like a slow burn song.
Yeah.
It is hauntingly pretty because you have like some of those super deep horns contrasting with that super high soprano.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe middle towards the end, you have like a mezzo or an alto soprano singing at the same time.
Yeah.
I thought that was nice. That was a nice contrast. It was pretty. This version of the song is more complex than the original, so mm-hmm. It kept me interested a little bit more. Maybe not complex. It was more diverse.
It's got an entire orchestra, violin, horns, 2 voices.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to have more sounds to it.
Yeah. It was more interesting than the original, for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Mm-hmm.
By the end, I like it. I like this song. I like this version better than the original.
Ooh.
Yeah, because I think it speaks more to the soprano singer's quality of voice.
Yeah.
Like you latch on to the haunting, interesting parts of the lyrics versus mm-hmm. the folky bits of the lyrics that you get in the original,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I like it. It kind of fits a little bit more in my brain.
Nice.
Especially like when you talk about Blue Crystal Fire. Come on, like that's like some LSD, like drug trippy shit that you're talking about, yeah. right? That doesn't quite fit in my mind with a folk song. It fit in my mind with more of like a avant-garde Swedish song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the lyrics, what the fuck is a Blue Crystal Fire? Anyway.
It's a fire made of blue crystals.
Cool. We solved it. There is kind of like this drug trippy sort of thing mixed with longing for love. And there's blue crystal fire. And then there's deer with silver antlers. And like, this dude's tripping out, dude. Tripping balls.
Totally.
But he's also, while tripping balls, reminiscing or thinking about a lover. Because there's like, deep within the forest, I'll wait for you, my love. That sort of, those sort of lyrics. So maybe completely wrong. Maybe his love passed away and he's trying to reach out in the spiritual realm and has done some mind-altering stuff.
I can see that.
Or was maybe hypnotized or went to a medium and they did some weird shit and then he's seeing Blue Crystal Fire looking for his love.
I love your fucking stories that you make up behind these songs. Like, I feel like you definitely think more about it than what probably the writer did. Like, he was probably tripping on some shit.
Yeah. So the original song is folk love song, whereas the cover has a more haunting feel to it.
Yeah.
Dark feel to it. So maybe there's that part of losing someone.
Yeah.
So it covers several feelings in both versions.
Yeah.
One more thing I want to talk about in this song is how different this version is from the original.
Uh-huh.
Like with Miley and Dolly, with Jolene, I don't feel those two versions are that far apart.
True. Yeah, I would agree.
When it comes to this song, the Fire Orchestra version is very, very different from Robbie Basho's.
Yes.
What is your opinion on if an artist covers a song, how much of the original should they stick to? How much should they inject into it? And how far is too far? Did they just completely change the song and the original is lost? That so on and so forth. Like, just in general, what do you feel about that?
I'm a fan of like artistic freedom. And so I don't think there's anything wrong with either approach. If you're going to cover somebody's art, it makes sense that you're doing it for a reason. And so if your reason is that you just really like it and you want to sing it as is, or you want to perform it as is, then you wouldn't change it much, right? Yeah. But if it inspires you and if it makes you creative to change it, then why not?
Mm-hmm.
I think I enjoy covers more that are different.
Okay.
Unless you change it, I'm not sure if there's anything for the listener to like gravitate to and to be like, oh, that's awesome. You twisted it in a way that I never thought you would. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like a rehash of the original. And you're like, yeah, that song is amazing. I want to listen to that song again. So I can see a point for both. It all depends on what your goal is, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I've heard cover versions that are very close to the original and they're good.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard some cover songs close to the original that are bad.
Right.
On the other side, I've heard cover versions that tried to do too much and just didn't work for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And then a song like this where they really changed a lot of it, but it still works. You know, there's no one or the other is better. It's just, is the cover well done?
Yeah, that's a very good point. That reminds me of the Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood cover of the song Shallow.
Oh, God.
By Lady Gaga.
Oh, God.
And what's his name? The handsome one.
Bradley Cooper?
Yes, thank you. Bradley Cooper. It's fucking the same song. It's just different singers. And it's like they took very little artistic freedom with it. It kind of just made me a little angry because I was like, it's the same fucking song.
Yeah,
it was. And it's not as good. No. Exactly. And it makes me want to listen to the good version, not the cover version.
Yeah.
It all depends on whether or not it's done well, right?
Yeah. That's really all that matters. Is it done well?
Yeah. Don't listen to the Garth Brooks, Trisha Yearwood song, guys. It sucks.
Trash. Okay. Out of 5 free jazzes, what would you rate each version?
I do really like the Fire Orchestra version of it.
Uh-huh.
I would give it a 4. 4 free jazzes.
4 free jazzes for the Fire Orchestra version.
Fire!
Yeah. How about Robbie Basho?
Oh, Robbie. I'm going to go with a 3.
So 3 and a 4, is that right?
Yep, 3 and 4.
It's very similar to my ratings for you.
Yeah, but I don't do decimal points because that shit's bullshit.
No, it's not. Let's wrap this all up. So this all stems from an argument that a friend and I have where he says cover songs are better, remixes are better. It's kind of a grand sweeping across the board statement.
Mm-hmm.
I argue the other way. In general, the original is better, but I took a step back and examined what is going on here. There are some cases where I do like the cover, and some notable examples are All Along the Watchtower by Jimi Hendrix, where he covered Bob Dylan's version, and then there's Santana's Black Magic Woman, a cover of a Fleetwood Mac song. But in general, I prefer the original, and I started to think about why is that? What makes these covers better, and what makes certain originals better? And in general, whatever version I hear first and love and get attached to, that's the version that's going to be the one for me.
Mm.
So if I listen to a cover first and I love it,
and
then I hear the original later, most often I won't flip-flop to, okay, the original is better than the cover.
Uh-huh.
And then vice versa. I grow up with a song, I love a song, and then someone covers it. In general, I'm going to stick to the original.
Yeah.
So would you say that's a fair or an accurate point? Are you that way too?
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see the merits behind that.
Can you think of a case where you loved the song for years and then a cover song came out and you said, actually, this cover song is better than this original that I've listened to for however long?
Annie, are you okay?
Oh, you like the Alien Ant Farm better?
Yeah, I think I like the Alien Ant Farm better. Well, I like them both, but I really do like the Alien Ant Farm one.
Did you really like Michael Jackson's version in the beginning too?
I was a huge fan of Michael Jackson, but not so much that like he wasn't my favorite artist. So maybe I wasn't super attached to the original, and that's why I like the cover better.
Yeah, that's key. Like, you could casually like a song and then a cover comes out that's better. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking more like
maybe that's that situation.
Like Marina's song Lies.
Uh-huh.
Like, you really love that, right?
I do love that song.
Can you imagine a cover coming into your future where you say, well, you know what? This cover is way better than Marina's.
It definitely would be hard to beat it.
I know it's a hypothetical. We can't really draw a conclusion from it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Smooth Criminal, That's a fair point. The Alien Ant Farm song is good, but I'm definitely going to go with Michael Jackson.
Yeah. I love how like you remember the actual name of the song and I'm like, Annie, are you okay? Shows how much I love that song.
To test out my theory, I experimented on my friend that made this argument that cover songs were better. Uh-huh. He's a huge fan of Linkin Park, and he's gone on record to say it's his favorite band. Mm-hmm. And so I started sending him Linkin Park covers. And he's like, I don't like this one. I'm like, okay, cool. I tried another one. Nope, I don't like this one either. And then, okay. So I find a cover that would hit all of his check boxes when he likes the song.
Yeah.
He does love covers. Number one, it's a cover. So I have that advantage, right? Uh-huh. But number two, he also loves male-female vocals together, duets. And it has that check. And it's a band he already follows. So there's three things that I'm like, I send it to him. I think it's one step closer. Whatever it is, I send it to him. And he's like, ooh, you know, I like it, but it's still not as good as Linkin Park. So I'm like, that's interesting. So he has a big connection to the original songs.
Yeah.
None of the covers are going to outdo the originals in that regard. But most of the songs that he likes that are covers, he didn't give a shit about the originals. He either doesn't like them or never grew up with them or never had a connection with them. So when he hears someone cover it, he's like, that's the song. That's the version that's the best.
I mean, it's totally makes sense. Like, your theory makes sense. If you really love a song, it's very hard to like change that song and have it be loved even more. You know what I mean? It's so hard. So I could totally see that being true.
So yeah, take a look at the cover songs that you like versus the originals. Like, why do you like the cover or why do you like the original better? Which version did you hear first? Tell me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, let us know.
Let me know. All right. Thank you for listening to Two Songs, One Couple.
If you like what you hear and you want more, find us on
Spotify,
Apple Podcasts,
TwoSongsOneCouple.com,
Facebook,
Twitter,
and Instagram.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
And there I wait for you. And there I wait for you.
Shake it off.
Shake it off. Shake it off. Shake it off.
Shake it off. Oh, oh. Shake it off. You like my rhyming scheme?
Totally. It's the best. It's the bestest of the bestest.
Yep.
I know.